listening to Podcast Beyond Belief, science-based parenting for free-thinking families.
Beyond Belief, it's a podcast you've got to hear to believe when the world's crying out in need. Here's a concrete foundation for your feet.
Welcome to Podcast Beyond Belief, science-based parenting for free-thinking families. We're the official podcast of Foundation Beyond Belief, a nonprofit organization designed to educate secular humanist families and focus their charitable giving. My name's Colin Thornton, broadcasting out of Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Heidi Anderson in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Hello.
Lori Tarr in Louisville, Kentucky.
Howdy.
John Paul Daigle in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, everybody.
And Elise Anders in Chicago, Illinois.
Hello.
Later in the podcast, we speak to evolution advocate Dr. Eugenie Scott. Well, let's go on to our interview with Dr. Eugenie Scott. Dr. Eugenie Scott is the Executive Director of the National Center for Science Education, a leading voice on the importance of evolution and science in the classroom, and the author of Evolution versus Creationism. Dr. Eugenie Scott, welcome to Podcast Beyond Belief.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
We're also joined by the co-hosts, Lori, Heidi, and John Paul.
Hi. Hi.
Hello.
So the National Center for Science Education is one of the 9 quarterly recipients of funding from the Foundation Beyond Belief, and we represent the foundation with our podcast. You may know that donors apportion a part of their donation to certain charities. So I'm going to start off by allowing you to make a pitch to all of the members of Foundation Beyond Belief why you guys deserve the money.
Thank you. We very much appreciate being one of your potential recipients, and I would be delighted if your members were willing to donate to us, and of course also join. I mean, hey, I'm not only going to pitch my organization for your quarterly donation. I'm going to try to get people to join us as well.
Okay.
You know how selfish I am. Why should you donate to and join the National Center for Science Education? Well, because we are really good at what we do. You know, the difference between hedgehogs and foxes. We are hedgehogs. We're an inch wide, but we are a mile deep. When it comes to the issue of the teaching of evolution in public schools, we are time-tested, as it were, in terms of knowing how to get, knowing the information and the approaches that people at the grassroots need to take to solve these problems. And there's no question but that the creation and evolution controversy is a grassroots problem. We have a very decentralized education system, so the problems that crop up are problems at the local school district or local school level or maybe at the state level. And the only people who can solve those problems are people who live in those districts or states. The National Academy of Sciences is a wonderful organization, but they aren't going to solve a problem in Lincoln, Nebraska. I mean, we need people who live in Lincoln, Nebraska to solve that problem. So what we've been doing for over 20 years is providing information and advice and helping to put together coalitions of people at the grassroots who then go and solve the problems. And on rare occasions, like Texas, like Kansas, and even Atlanta, Georgia, John Paul, on rare occasions, NCSE staff will take a more active role. But basically, our modus operandi is to hand out the fire extinguishers. And our fire extinguishers are, oh, God, this is going to be a horrible analogy to keep going. Our fire extinguishers are loaded and work. So if you want to do something significant about the creationism and evolution controversy, support us. We will be your surrogate activists, so to speak. Unless, of course, we have a problem in your area, and then you'll be our activists.
Now, I'm going to touch a little bit on Texas and some of the other hot spots later on. But I was just wondering, is this a problem, more of a problem than we know about? Do you guys hear from individual schools all over the place?
Oh, absolutely. Most of what we do, you'll never hear about. If you read our, if you visit our website, we have we post news of what's going on in the creationism and evolution controversy, and what's going on sometimes just in the field of science regarding evolution. But most of the stuff, like the teacher who calls us and wants to know what to do because he's got a parent who wants to opt out her kid from evolution, and this is going to make his course a complete disaster because he talks about evolution every couple weeks like he should, and the kid's going to be a yo-yo going back and forth to the library every 2 weeks and disrupting his class, you know, what does he do? Well, we can give him information about good arguments to take to his principal, good arguments to give to the parents. We can provide him with allies in his community at local universities, for example, and from his, oftentimes from his fellow teachers as well, because we work also with the science education organizations. So that's not something that's going to make the papers, and that's not something that we're going to post on our website. But that is a great deal of what we do, is helping individual teachers, advising individual school districts, and parents in those districts when, when the citizens elect the wrong school board, shall we say. But again, those local and regional kinds of school board disputes rarely make the New York Times. And that's really most of what we do.
Just the other week, we were talking about a teacher in Connecticut, I think, who created a program for his kids where he was comparing the life of Abraham Lincoln to Charles Darwin, and how he had to quit, or he basically volunteered to quit, because the school administrators said that he wasn't allowed to teach about evolution. That kind of surprised me, just because he was from the North. And I was wondering, do you find that this is a regional, more in the South and more rural cities, or is it all over? Is it widespread?
That's Mark Tangerone Weston, Connecticut. Yeah, and we were advising him behind the scenes as well, of course, and putting him in touch with people who might be able to help him. Good man and an excellent teacher. He's retired now, and the problem won't arise in the future, unfortunately, or fortunately for him, I guess. But yeah, but back to your question, let me put it this way. It's a demographic phenomenon rather than a regional phenomenon. Where you find controversy over the teaching of evolution tends to be in suburbs and small towns where you have smaller population, and just, you know, naturally, because small places have smaller populations, right? And if there's a strong component of that smaller population that happens to be religiously conservative, that is where you're most likely to find these problems. Now, the Midwest and the South have got lots and lots of small towns. And so it's not a big surprise that we have a lot of our calls for help from the Midwest and the South. We also get it from upstate New York and the Northwest, places like Oregon and Idaho and so, because they're full of small towns. I think that's more of a problem than anything else, although obviously in an area like the Northeast, where the predominant religious tradition is Catholic and mainstream Protestant, you're not going to have the kind of religious conservatism that you get in parts of the country where the evangelical tradition is a lot stronger. So it's a mixture of things, but back for a number of years, when I give talks at either universities or scientist conferences or science teacher conferences, I would say rhetorically, but truthfully, put me down in any town you want to, and within 24 hours, I will find you a teacher, either who's teaching creationism or a teacher who's afraid to teach evolution. Well, I you know, I'd say that, and the college professors, the university scientists would go, gasp! Are you? Oh, this is there. The teachers would just sit there and say, okay, and your next point is. So I stopped using that line with teachers because they already know this.
Yeah.
This wasn't a big surprise to them. You can find creationism, you can find anti-evolutionism anywhere.
I was kind of hoping it wasn't so widespread, you know, I was hoping that it was the stories I hear over the news were the rare cases.
No. Well, to use a science metaphor as opposed to a forest fire metaphor, a brush fire metaphor, there's a lot of background radiation. That you don't really notice unless you're looking for it. And obviously, when people have these problems locally, they look for NCSC. We also try to keep our ears attuned to problems that show up. We monitor. And, of course, the Internet has improved our ability to do this hugely because all these little small and sometimes even weekly newspapers are now online. So we have a much easier time figuring out what's going on around the country than we did, you know, 20 years ago when we started, and there wasn't this wonderful resource. Of course, if you Google creationism and evolution, you will find far more sites promoting creationism than our point of view. But oh well, I just like to think our data is much better. Our data are much better. Pardon. There we go.
Dr. Scott, can you explain to us why America seems to have such a controversy with creationism and evolution, whereas some other countries don't see this as an issue at all?
There's actually two points to make in response to that. Number one, more's the pity, other countries are starting to have more problems with creationism. We're getting more reports of creationism in Europe, in Great Britain. We've always had problems with creationism in places like South Korea. Latin America is increasing its proportion of its population that are evangelical Christian, Protestants, and as opposed to Catholics. Catholics basically don't have a problem with evolution, but evangelical Protestant Christians do. And so we're getting more reports from Latin America as well. But certainly it's much more prevalent here. And so your original question certainly is worth contemplating. Like everything else, it's culture and history. The United States has a very decentralized education system. One thing I always have to tell foreign reporters when I'm interviewed by them is that, you know, the U.S. doesn't have a national curriculum, and they're stunned. They just cannot understand how a modern industrial state could possibly survive without a national science curriculum. Well, we do, because we really think local control of education is important. There's all sorts of historical reasons for that. But because of the decentralization of education, we have this real patchwork of curricula around this country where, you know, evolution is taught in this district but not in that one. It's taught in this one, not in that one, and so forth. And, of course, about, you know, 17,000 local school districts are all managed by elected officials. And the elected part is very important because that means that education is much more politicized in the U.S. than it is in other places. So we have this decentralized education system that's highly politicized because of the elected nature of the governance. And then the second factor that I think contributes very strongly to why we have this problem and other nations by and large don't, at least not to the degree we do, is that the United States has an unusually conservative form of Christianity that you really don't find historically in Europe or Great Britain. The major traditions, of course, in Europe and Great Britain is Anglicanism, Lutheranism, Catholicism, and these are not literalist theologies. The Catholics have, for a very, very long time, accepted that humans and other creatures evolved from earlier forms, and their particular theological slant is that God instilled a soul into some primitive human, and that's sort of the Adam and Eve equivalent, and so there you go. But it, you know, the six 24-hour days, nah, Catholics don't believe that. I think more evolution is taught in Catholic schools, frankly, than in public schools. I mean, they're just matter of fact about this. But in the United States, we have this form of conservative Protestant Christianity that's fairly new. It actually started only in the early 1900s, and it's called fundamentalism. It was based on a religious movement of the teens and early 20s. 19-teens and early 1920s, where a series of pamphlets called the 12 Fundamentals were written. And this outlined this new kind of conservative Protestantism, which became called fundamentalism. It's sort of a branch of evangelical Christianity. It's a more conservative branch. And because of fundamentalism and how popular it became and how much it came to dominate American Protestant Christianity, we do have a problem with evolution because fundamentalism is a pretty literalist kind of theology where the Bible is considered not just true in a spiritual sense, but literally true in most respects, including that six 24-hour day special creation. And that's a big part of the problem that we have with evolution.
So I'm curious, Dr. Scott, why, you know, what would you say to people who are just curious why they should care whether evolution is taught in grade school or middle school or even high school?
Well, for one thing, it's sort of like teaching chemistry without teaching the periodic table. Evolution, the idea that living things have common ancestors, is an extremely important idea in biology that really ties the whole field together. What common ancestry does, what the idea of common ancestry does, is tell you why biological phenomena are like they are instead of some other way. And there's lots of different ways that you could organize life on this planet, but life is organized in a very particular way because living things branched off from this tree of life. And if you don't understand that, you do not understand the very fundamentals of the biological sciences. Now, we've been talking about biological evolution, but, you know, geology is an evolutionary science as well because the planet Earth has had this cumulative change over time. And astronomy is an evolutionary science, astronomical phenomena, galaxies and stars and planets. The universe has cumulatively changed over time. So if you reject the idea of evolution broadly stated in that way, in favor of special creation, that God created everything like we see it in its present form, then you are really misunderstanding virtually all of science. And I think we need, there's two reasons why that's bad. We need a more scientifically literate population rather than a less literate one, because there's an awful lot of issues that we as voting citizens have to think about and decide upon and pass that information and those opinions on to our elected representatives that that are very important for our society. And secondly, we really need to be generating the next generation of scientists. And if we are deliberately miseducating students about such basic science as the universe has changed over time, and there has been this cumulative change in living things as well, then we're not going to be producing that pipeline. Of course, once you get to college, evolution is taught matter-of-factly, except for places like Bob Jones, I guess. But you know, we don't get a lot of our science leaders out of Bob Jones. Every secular and even the better regarded sectarian institutions have, you know, teach evolution matter-of-factly. And we need to, and so all those poor kids who from K-12 have been told that evolution never happened, that it's scientists are giving up on evolution, it's weak science, they get to college and all of a sudden, surprise, no, actually it's the foundation of what we're doing here. You have a lot of remedial work to do.
Could you give some practical advice? You know, this podcast is going out to parents of free thinkers, and I'm sure all of them are very concerned about their individual school districts. What can a parent do to prevent creationism from getting in the classroom in their school district? What's just a few common things that they can do to help your organization?
Well, number one, my first advice to any citizen, particularly a parent who has kids in school or will have kids in school, pay attention. Pay attention to who is running for your school board and what are these people's positions. I would love to see science being given more attention overall, not just the evolution issue, but because of No Child Left Behind, which is another topic that we could talk about for another whole podcast, there has been an inordinate focus upon reading and math, and science has been kind of shoved to the sides in far too many states and school districts around the country. Be sure that your teacher, that the people running for school board think that science is important and will encourage the teachers to pay attention to it and will not lean on the teachers only to improve the test scores in English and reading. The second thing that a parent should do is support your local teacher. If you have a child in middle school or high school, which is really when evolution comes into the curriculum in most states and districts, when you have your parents' night with that teacher, number one, be very supportive of science education. When you talk to that to those teachers, with a friendly smile, say, I'm really glad that our state science standards include evolution, and I want you to know that if anybody gives you any problem about teaching evolution, I've got your back, because it's really important that our kids learn evolution. Do it that way rather than, Mrs. Jones, you are going to teach evolution, aren't you? You know, I hate to say it, but some of the people on our side are not necessarily politic when it comes to people skills. Be supportive of your teacher. Encourage your teachers to teach evolution. They will, depending on where you live, of course, it's easy for teachers to hear from the anti-evolutionists. They don't always hear from the pro-evolutionists. And if the only voice that the teachers hear is the parent who comes and said, you're not going to teach little Jimmy evolution this year, are you, Mrs. Brown? No, you know, we have so much work to do on photosynthesis, we probably just won't get along to those chapters after all. So you want to be supportive of teachers in a non-threatening way. And then thirdly, pay attention again. Pay attention to what goes on in the classroom. Kids can go for years without coming home and saying, guess what we learned in school today, Mom? So take a look at the books that your kids are bringing, the science books that your kids are bringing home, especially the biology and earth science books. See if evolution is included, if it's treated properly. Ask your child if the teacher is assigning those chapters. If that's not the case, then you should really address the issue. You should really, again, in a friendly way, let that teacher know that you really expect your child to learn evolution. Because, of course, all the other children are going to learn too if you speak up.
I'm assuming you'd also like to see more evolution advocates on the school boards around the country.
Absolutely. I suppose a fourth suggestion that I would make, although it's obviously a much more difficult one. The first three are things that anybody can do. All it just takes is a little bit of awareness. But if you are willing to run for your local school board, that's fabulous. More scientists are doing that, by the way. At the American Association for the Advancement of Science meetings for the last two or three years, there have been sessions on running for office, running for local school board, running for congressman, etc. And it's a good thing. We really need more scientists in these positions.
One thing, I want to switch gears a little bit, not too much, but to talk about the argument against evolution in the classroom. And isn't this the problem comes from a conflation between atheism and evolution, and basically they've become the same thing, and in some people's eyes at least, and that this is a problem perhaps exacerbated by some of the Darwinists that are a little bit more outspoken, like Richard Dawkins. So how do you respond to that complaint?
Well, of course, the idea that evolution equates to atheism is something that the creationists have been pushing for 30 plus years. It's the it's what they consider a strong argument against teaching evolution in the schools. And of course, as you mentioned, there certainly are non-believers who believe the same thing, that atheism is the same as evolution in the sense that if you're an atheist, of course, you will accept evolution, but the converse is also true, that if you accept evolution, of course, you have to be an atheist. And both sides are I think, wrong for two reasons. One, the obvious one, is just that they're not paying attention to the evidence, that it is empirically demonstrable that there are many people of faith who have no problem with evolution. So it simply is not empirically true that if you accept evolution, you therefore have to abandon your faith. What you do have to do, however, is abandon certain kinds of faith. And this gets into the second reason why it's not good reasoning. I think people on both sides of the issue, the pro and the antis, who make this equation, are demonstrating a very limited understanding of evolution, or excuse me, of religion. They may or may not know much about evolution, especially the people on the creationist side, but they certainly are expressing an opinion that does not show much understanding of a huge range of beliefs that are out there among people who identify themselves as religious. Remember, I'm coming at this from the background of an anthropologist. So when I talk about religion, I'm not just talking about fundamentalist Christianity. I'm not even talking about Christianity. I'm not even talking about world religions. I'm talking about all of the expressions that human beings have come up with to somehow tie themselves to this non-material reality that most human beings seem to feel exist out there. And so that includes tribal religions as well as Buddhism and Hinduism and Christianity. But the fact of the matter is, even if you just look at Christianity, which is the predominant religion in our nation, if you just look at Christianity, there's a huge range of beliefs expressed by people who identify themselves as Christian. Different concepts of God, what God is, what God does, and certainly many different interpretations of what it means to be a Christian. And for the majority of Christians, at least if they understand their denomination's more or less official position on this, evolution isn't a problem. It is a problem, no question. Just hands on, it's a big problem if you interpret the scriptures literally. If you think that God created everything at one time in its present form, evolution isn't going to work for you, and you're going to oppose it very strongly, and it's not going to be acceptable. But Catholics and mainstream Protestants aren't literalists in their official theologies, even though many people don't understand that. And it's just simply not the case that even Christian faith is incompatible with acceptance of evolution. Now, of course, when I say that, what people on both sides usually do, either the strong creationists or the strong anti-creationists, the strong anti-religionists, they'll both sides. It's really interesting how this happened. Will immediately shift the goalposts. Well, I wasn't just talking about the possibility of accepting evolution and being religious, but it just doesn't make any sense. It's not, it's not something that you can defend intellectually, which is another completely different question. But, you know, this goalpost moving shouldn't be allowed to obscure the very real fact that many, many people of faith, both scientists who are religious, who accept evolution, as well as many members of the clergy and laymen who are religious, don't have a problem with evolution being compatible with their religious views.
I'd just like to thank you, Dr. Eugenie Scott, for coming on Podcast Beyond Belief.
Well, I enjoyed it very much.
Foundation Beyond Belief goes to great lengths to choose charities that are secular, pro-science, and financially responsible. The National Center for Science Education is just one of 9 nonprofit organizations that receives funding from the foundation this quarter. If you want to protect education from the evangelical agenda, give some thought to laying down some coin every month for the National Center for Science Education on behalf of Foundation Beyond Belief. We want to thank Dr. Eugenie Scott for the interview, Rob Tarr for taking over editing, and my panel of parenting bloggers. Thanks, everyone. The Podcast Beyond Belief theme song is by Andrew Samples of the band Parachute Musical. For more information, you can check out our website, sciencebasedparenting.com, skeptchick.org, shethought.com, rationalmoms.com, and foundationbeyondbelief.org. Please send comments and questions to podcastbeyondbelief@gmail.com and join our Facebook group. The opinions and commentary expressed on this podcast belong to the individual hosts and guests and are not intended to be a direct reflection of the views of Foundation Beyond Belief. The hosts are secular humanists and science advocates who volunteer their time. Comments on the podcast should never be considered medical advice. Go visit your doctor or pediatrician for some of that.
Podcast Beyond Belief is brought to you in partnership with ScienceBasedParenting.com and the Foundation Beyond Belief, a nonprofit charitable organization representing atheists and secular humanists.
Beyond Belief. It's a podcast you've got to hear to believe when the world's crying out in need. Here's a concrete foundation for your feet. We're podcasting from a nation of concrete beliefs.